first hour of Issues Etc. today is Open Lines. This is also the last live day of the program for the week. I will remind you, as I give you our call-in numbers for this first hour and the remaining 2 hours of Issues Etc., wherein we will have guests galore, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. During this first hour, we're going to be hearing from George W. Bush. He was in Turkey earlier this week for a NATO summit. Now, this is a very important meeting that he attended. NATO has, it's really a military alliance, and it will be crucial in the plans that President George W. Bush has for the Middle East in particular, for the future of Iraq. The subject I'd like to talk about is not so much Iraq, but Turkey and its admission into the UN. We spoke earlier this week with Uwe Simonetto, religion editor for United Press International, on that very subject. Now, my question is this, not so much a question, just a, I'm pondering this. What you're going to hear the president say is good stuff. Good stuff about democracy, good stuff about religious freedom in democracy. He is on message. He's trying very clearly to speak to the Turkish people and I think to a broader Islamic audience about democracy. I'm just wondering whether he's leaving something out, whether this is, well, to put it bluntly, when he talks about getting Turkey into the European Union and democracy being able to flourish in the Middle East, is he being naive? We'll hear from the president here in just a few minutes. He seems to be taking into account that democracy can tolerate just about any religion. And under democracy, just about any religion, and America's a good example of that, can flourish and have freedom of practice and belief. The question that is not being asked, maybe you'll hear it differently, is whether or not all religions are compatible with democracy. It's a question we've asked before here on Issues Etc. In the second hour of the program, Dr. J.C. Wilkie joins us. He's a physician and president of Life Issues Institute. He's going to be talking about communicating the pro-life message, putting a sharper edge on some of our rhetoric, some of our terms, also being careful about how our terms are being heard by the broader audience, and what are we giving away when we use terms like pro-choice? I use the term all the time because that's what the other side calls themselves. I want to communicate clearly of who I'm talking about, so I say pro-choice. Is it accurate? Am I giving something away when I use the term pro-choice? We'll talk about that in the second hour of the program with Dr. J.C. Wilkie. We'll also be talking with Bob Alico of Discernment Ministry International about the Word Faith Movement and their teaching of man's deification. Very crazy teaching they have. Some people find it hard to believe that Word Faith teachers teach it and that their listeners believe it, but Bob comes from the movement. He'll be telling us about that there in the second hour of the program. In the third hour, Congressman John Shimkus joins us to talk about the transfer of sovereignty to Iraq of the Illinois 19th Congressional District, and Dr. Beverly Yonke will round off our last few minutes of Issues Etc. today. We'll talk about the Christian family. Is it just a Norman Rockwell quaint throwback to a simpler era? Or is it, as she asserts, a countercultural presence in the world of amazing influence? Dr. Beverly Yonke will be our guest in the last 25 minutes of Issues Etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'd like your reaction to some of the things President George W. Bush had to say earlier this week when he was meeting with NATO leaders and he was in Turkey. First, let's hear some of the things that the president had to say. Bush says that he was pleased to meet with the six Turkish religious leaders.
They represent the very best of Turkey, which is a country that is secular in its politics and strong in its faith. And we've had a wonderful discussion.
Now, this is the picture that has emerged of Turkey. The popular picture of Turkey is secular in its politics, strong in its faith. It is a, this is one case, I think one case out of an entire half world of Islamic nations where you might be able to the case, and I think the president is acting upon that case, where you have a secular state, a democracy of sorts, with the majority of its population being Muslim, devotees of Islam. This is not a racial issue. This is a religious issue. The distinction is easy to make in the case of Islam, because not all Muslims are Arab. Although we tend to think of Muslims as Arab, the majority of Muslims in the world, in fact, are not Arab. They're Asian. But, and many of them are Indian as well. But since it's the Arab Muslims that are causing the trouble, at least some of them are causing the trouble on the world scene of late, we tend to think of the two together. Secular in its politics, strong in its faith. President Bush also told the Turkish Prime Minister that his Islamic nation is a democratic model for the region.
I appreciate so very much the example your country has set on how to be a Muslim country and at the same time a country which embraces democracy and rule of law and freedom.
Now, this term democracy is going to be rather important here in the remainder of the president's comments we're going to play for you in just a moment. We use the term, and we understand it in our context. When we talk about democracy, Americans tend to think about democracy as what we have, a constitutional republic, representative government. And I think it's safe to say that America is probably an example of the pinnacle of democracy in the modern age. And what I mean, I'm not talking about America as being the pinnacle of civilization. We're not that, believe me. We may be technologically and economically the pinnacle, but in terms of civilization, I think we're a far cry from it. The pinnacle of democracy in the way it works itself out, because in the world there's democracy, and then there's democracy. For instance, Israel is, I guess, technically speaking, a democracy, a parliamentary democracy. But religion, religious freedom, they have a very definitely different definition of religious freedom in Israel, even though they are technically a democracy. Turkey? Yes, a democracy. Perhaps even more of a democracy than even the state of Israel. A model for democracy in the region? Maybe. We would be happy if all of them are like Turkey, sure. Is it the exception that proves the rule? Or is it the signpost that points the way to the future of the Middle East and the future of the Islamic world? What kind of religious freedoms are granted in Turkey? Not the kind that we enjoy. Don't think for a moment you can go to Turkey and say, proselytize on the street for Jesus Christ and not run afoul of the law. You will run afoul of the law. You can be a Christian. But very much like in the case of Israel, you cannot proselytize legally. Now, I don't call that religious freedom in its fullest sense. President Bush also says that Muslims have nothing to fear from the influence of Western culture.
Some people in Muslim cultures identify democracy with the worst of Western popular culture and want no part of it. And I assure them, when I speak about the blessings of liberty, coarse videos, and crass commercialism are not what I have in mind.
It's a good point. It's a great point. I'm very glad to hear the president make this point. Now, maybe he's made it before, I haven't heard it, but I'm glad to hear him make it. When the Muslim world looks at American culture, and they hear us use the word freedom or liberty, as in the case of what the president was saying there, they often, what they hear, what they perceive is not liberty, but libertinism, license, rather than liberty. Freedom to do whatever you darn well please, freedom to corrupt the morals of the young, things like that. And the president is wise to say, look, when I'm talking about liberty, I am not talking about the filth that America spews out of its culture into the rest of the world through the broadcast medium, through the internet, and everything else. He's very wise to make this point. But I'm wondering still, is it only that, only the fact that, well, they look at democracy and they think, wow, the worst that democracy has given the world, pornography, violent movies, the exploitation of sex. Is that their only beef with democracy? I'm talking about the Muslim world. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. President Bush also says that freedom of religion, freedom, is compatible with democracy.
Citizens of a free society have every right to strive peacefully for a moral society. Democratic values also do not require citizens to abandon their faith.
Now, what does striving for a moral society look like in the Muslim world? Can that be done apart from, say, making the laws of the Quran and the Hadith the laws of the land? Blurring the distinction between the mosque and the state capital. Can it be done? Striving for a moral society, and he's right on the face of it, he's absolutely right, the president is, that under democracy, everyone, in their own way, however they choose, is free to pursue and to help build a moral society. He's going to go on in just a minute to explain how that might be done in detail. But can it be done in an Islamic world, in an Islamic nation, where perhaps striving for a moral society means the Sharia law? Sounds like you might not be taking that into account. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The president also says that democracy can be strengthened by religion.
All democracies are made stronger when religious people teach and demonstrate upright conduct, family commitment, respect for the law, and compassion for the weak. Democratic society should welcome, not fear, the participation of the faithful.
All right. Here's the point he's been coming to. Here's the point that I mentioned before. Democratic societies should, and by and large do, welcome the participation of the faithful. And he's not talking here about Christian faithful or Islamic faithful. He's talking about the faithful, people of all religions. He's right. Part and parcel of the kind of democracy that the president is promoting there in the Middle East is religious freedom. But he's talking to a nation here, Turkey in particular, where that kind of religious freedom does not exist. And he might be quite right in saying that democracy flourishes, that freedom flourishes when people of all religions under democracy pursue their various beliefs and practices. He's trying to make the case that democracy is at its best when it permits religious freedom. And that democracy is not incompatible with religious freedom, and it's not incompatible with anyone, including a Muslim, practicing his religion. You don't have to give up your faith in order to accept democracy. He's quite right in all of that. But one question is being unanswered, and that is, while democracy may be compatible with any and every religion, is every religion compatible with democracy? In other words, you can practice your religion under democracy within the bounds of law, but is every religion compatible with democracy? President Bush also says that democracy should promote, not restrict, religious freedom.
Democratic values also do not require citizens to abandon their faith. No democracy can allow religious people to impose their own view of perfection on others, because this invites cruelty and arrogance that are foreign to every faith.
Now, the president is trying to make a case here that democracy is a good thing, that it does not threaten the Islamic world, and it will not curtail the practice of their religion. Isn't that really it? Is he right? A free democratic society with full religious freedom and all the other kind of freedoms that go along with it. Can a Muslim live consistently in that society and practice his religion to its conclusion? And can a majority Muslim nation, can it practice that kind of democracy and remain majority Muslim? He says Turkey's a model of it, but they don't have religious freedom. Is something holding them back there? Is that a signal that while who knows? Islam may be compatible with democracy in many ways when it comes to religious freedom, which is a pretty crucial freedom. It isn't. you can't be and remain Muslim. Finally, President George W. Bush said in Turkey earlier this week that Muslims don't need to worry about democracy interfering with their religious beliefs.
All democracies are made stronger when religious people teach and demonstrate upright conduct, family commitment, respect for the law, and compassion for the weak.
And again, who can argue? Democracies are made stronger when everyone lives and plays by the rules. Are the rules of Islam, the beliefs and the tenets of Islam, compatible with democracy? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Dennis is calling from his car. Dennis, welcome. You're first up on Open Lines, Issues, etc.
Hello, Pastor Todd.
Hi, Dennis.
How are you today? And thank you for taking my call. I'd like to make a couple of comments about democracy and Islam. When you were talking about, you know, whether or not Western influences are what's concerning them, I think what's concerning them more are the openness and the freedom and of exchange of ideas and beliefs and doctrines, which most threaten, I guess, Orthodox Islam. If you look into the recent past with author Salman Rushdie and, you know, his book, The Satanic Verses, and how they proclaimed a fatwa, which is a death sentence against him, you know, just because he had a different perspective and was writing about Islam from a different point of view, that was intolerable to them. It was a more moderate and I suppose, liberal point of view. He was questioning the validity and the historicity of Islam itself. And what that engendered within the Orthodox Muslim world was nothing more than a riotous response. They wanted him put to death. I think, you know, the exchange of ideas and the openness and the questioning of the historicity of Islam is a major fundamental issue that they feel threatens their religious freedom. I'm not their religious freedom, their religious orthodoxy.
Well, let me stop you there for just a second. Are you saying then that we hear this like, you know, the terrorists oppose freedom or they're afraid of freedom, they don't like liberty. Are you saying that even for the average Muslim, a free exchange of ideas in an open marketplace of ideas would threaten their religious freedom because there would be people like, there'd be Salman Rushdie times 1,000 saying, look, I don't even know if this religion is historic. I don't know if its historic claims are even true.
That's precisely, you know, what I'm bringing up. If you look at Muslims in the United States and what happens after one or two generations, and I know not a lot of the studies have been done, but there's anecdotal information that I've had in my own contact with Muslims from the Middle East. You know, after they come here, they have a tendency to moderate their ideas and to start to mold themselves around our culture. They start to ask questions about their religion. They don't practice it as fervently as they do in the Middle East. And it seems to get, and I don't mean this derisively, it seems to get watered down a little bit as it passes from generation to generation. And this is precisely what the Orthodox Muslims do not want to occur. They want to cleave tenaciously, you know, to this orthodoxy that they have and this social control that they have in the Middle East. And basically, it's they terrorize people into believing, into following this form of Islam that they've propagated upon their masses.
Which is the genuine form of Islam, to your way of thinking, Dennis? Is it the slightly more domesticated, peace-loving Islam that we see in the Western world? Or is it the fatwa-issuing imams of the Islamic world?
No, though they both derive from the same source, and it's difficult, you know, to give an answer. I mean, my own opinion is that, you know, I've met Muslims who are very moderate, who are very liberal, but they're more of the Western variety. You know, those Muslims are definitely persecuted, you know, in the Middle East almost as much as Christians are, and you know, there certainly are verses in the Quran which endorse violence, which endorse persecution of people who are not of the Muslim faith. It has elements of both. I mean, that's all, the only way I can answer that for you.
Dennis, thank you very much for the call. Now, don't misunderstand me, folks, because this is a crucial distinction that I do not want to be misunderstood on. I am not talking about whether any group of people themselves, apart from their religious beliefs, can live under democracy. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, as you will hear sometimes people say, well, Arabs, they can't live in freedom. They're mentally, sociologically incapable of it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the possible incompatibility between the religious system of Islam and democracy and freedom. A lot of the president's plan hangs on the assumption that at least in terms of the freedoms granted by democracy and constitutional law and the rule of law, at least with regard to that, Islam as a religious system is neutral. That is the assumption he seems to be operating with. I don't know if he believes it or not, but that's what seems to be behind what he's talking about. Is Islam neutral when it comes to democracy? Other religions certainly are neutral when it comes to democracy. Christianity would be a good example. Christianity can flourish and be practiced under any system. It doesn't mean it's always pleasant, but it can be practiced under any system. Good, bad, in between. Back to the phones, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, Stan, calling from his car.
Yeah, Pastor, nice to talk to you. Now, I don't think democracy will ever flourish under strict Islamic countries, and even in their new charter or constitution or whatever you want to call it, the first thing that was stated is that Iraq will be an Islamic state. And by Islam itself, by the Hadith, I think it's like seven or eight different places in the Hadith, which is their second holy book, states that they are the government. You know, you have to do exactly what says in Islam. I look at the ones of this country, the people who claim Islam in this country but are westernized, no different than I look in same perspective at Christians who believe only a part of the Bible and ignore the other part. I think there's a lot of Islamic people that have fallen away from their religion in this country because they've been westernized. If they try to live in an Islamic country like they do in this country, they would be taken out and killed. I mean, the Quran says to do that. And also, in no Islamic country will you ever find another religion allowed. It's not allowed. I mean, There are Christians in Iraq, but I don't know what's going to happen to them. The only reason they were allowed was because of the unbelievable rule of Saddam Hussein, who killed anybody that tried to stir up trouble. And the Christians didn't stir up trouble.
Stan, thank you very much for the call. We're coming up on this break. Well, yes, under Saddam Hussein, Christianity was tolerated. Now, don't get me wrong, they still couldn't proselytize. But it was, as far as it could be, a secular state there where Christianity and other religions were tolerated to a point. There's a difference between toleration and religious freedom. When we come back, we're going to discuss a poll of Muslim American voters and how it came out recently. You probably heard about this. It's open lines for the next 25 minutes after this break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And then in the second hour of the program, Dr. J.C. Wilkie will join us to talk about how we communicate the pro-life message.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Fascism suffered a military defeat in World War II, but how are ideas like the disregard for moral objectivity, the exaltation of the state, and the employment of thought control still flourishing today? You can find out with our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, titled Modern Fascism, Liquidating the Judeo-Christian Worldview. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Gene Edward V. Modern Fascism is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about our Book of the Month on the web, issuesetc.org. Just click the What's New section. Richard John Newhouse writes, Modern Fascism is sure to stir controversy and a careful rethinking of the culture, politics, and spiritual forces of our time. Modern Fascism costs $17.99 plus shipping and handling. Modern Fascism, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July.
Sports have eternal value when they're used to present Christ's love. This Global Minute highlights a sports outreach in Eastern Europe. Getting kids together for organized sports was the focus of the first ever kids games in the Republic of Moldova. It was sponsored by the mission agency Operation Mobilization and got everyone involved, even the mayor's office, schools, and local churches. Over 1,200 children and youth participated. The games and sports activities were combined with health teaching, and the local OM team used biblical illustrations to teach on different topics, including morals and ethics. Please pray that many lives would be changed through kids' games and that God's kingdom would grow in Moldova. A second kids' games outreach in Moldova is planned for late September. Use your skills around the world to share Christ. Learn more on the website www.usa.om.org. That's usa.om.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. The Declaration of Independence says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Is it self-evident that we are all created equal when you listen to the words we sometimes use to describe others? Is the right to life and liberty self-evident to terrorists and to their sympathizers? Is the right to life self-evident when the pro-choice movement denies that right to the unborn? Is it the pursuit of happiness, or just happiness, that is so self-evident today? We expect instant happiness, happiness on demand. Change the channel, change the marriage, if you're not satisfied, happiness, rather than the pursuit of happiness through sacrifice and hard work. Is it self-evident that these unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness come to us from a Creator? These things were self-evident to the Founding Fathers. They were learned men who had thought and studied deeply about human nature and how we can best govern ourselves. 228 years later, we could benefit from renewed study and appreciation of the assumptions underlining our precious independence. I'm Dale Meyer.
Issues, etc. is underwritten in part locally by Bethany Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran is located at 5600 Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights. The Reverend Randy Emmons is the pastor. Their phone number, 618-632-6906. 632-6906. Bethany Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights. www.bethanylcms.org. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Here in the first hour, we're in the middle of open lines for your questions and your comments. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In the second hour, Dr. J.C. Wilkie will talk about communicating the pro-life message. Bob Leko will also join us to talk about the Word Faith Movement's teaching about the deification of man. And Congressman John Shimkus will join us in the third hour to talk about the transfer of sovereignty to Iraq that took place very early this week. Dr. Beverly Yonke will also be with us to talk about the Christian family in the last 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. There was a poll conducted by the Council on American Islamic Relations. This poll of Muslim American voters found that more than half support Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry. Okay, more than half. 26% favor independent candidate Ralph Nader. I imagine that among voters, that's the highest he generally tends to get. The interesting finding here is that just 2% of American Muslim voters plan to vote for President George W. Bush. Now let's hear from Nihad Awa of the Council on American Islamic Relations. He says his group polls shows very little support for American Muslims for President Bush.
The Muslim community and the Muslim voters are not satisfied with the performance of the administration, whether on domestic issues, including civil rights, or foreign policy issues like peace in the Middle East, the war in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Now, a lot is being made of this poll, and we need to bear in mind, of course, that Muslims are a very, very, very small minority in the United States. In single digits, small single digits in the United States. So the impact of this is more symbolic than significant for how the the presidential race is going to come out. That's not the point. The point is, at least according to CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, according to their poll, well, likely voters among Muslims have no enthusiasm. One might even say 2% could qualify as zero enthusiasm for President George W. Bush. Now, Nihad Awad, director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, says that the poll shows some favorable support for Ralph Nader.
Ralph Nader has been working closely with Muslim American and Arab American voters. They feel that he has been addressing some of their issues, including civil rights, the USA Patriot Act, the foreign policy, and he has been meeting with Muslim voters in key states.
So what does Ralph Nader? He is the Green Party candidate for president this year. He was as well in the last cycle. What does he think about this poll? He says Muslims in the United States have become targets of prejudice since 9/11.
Muslim Americans are only the latest religious and ethnic group to feel the brunt of political hysteria and abuse.
Now, I understand why this would resonate with people who resonate with the American Islamic Relations, the Council on American Islamic Relations. But in what way has religious hysteria, how have Muslims in America been the brunt of religious hysteria? Granted, right around the aftermath of 9/11, I didn't hear any, but I imagine that there were people saying, you know, Muslims are the problem. You do have people like me who ask the question whether or not Islam is compatible with democracy, whether or not Islam itself is inevitably leads in a world like ours toward terrorism. That's not hysteria. Those are open, honest questions that we have to be asking and answering these questions. It's just a matter of being prudent. It's a matter of being wise. If there was a religion that people suspected, say, that part and parcel of the religion was child sacrifice, wouldn't it be wise for the community, small town, whatever it is, if this religion were going to set itself up there, have their church or whatever you might call it there in your town, to say, is it part and parcel of this religion to sacrifice children? And if so, does it represent a danger to the children in our community? It would be a wise question to ask. That's a crude comparison, but it is wise to ask whether or not Islam, part and parcel of Islam, is what we see taking place among the terrorists. Nader also says that terrorism shouldn't be blamed on Islam.
Every major religion has been misused by its own violators for violent purposes. We should remember the Crusades.
All right, we should. I agree with Ralph Nader on this. We should. To our shame, we should remember the Crusades. Yes, Christianity has been misused by, as he say, by its violators at cross purposes with the Christian faith itself. And that's really back to the crux of the question. When we see terrorism, is this an example of the adherents of Islam becoming violators of Islam and misusing their religion toward violent ends? Or are they being consistent with Islam? Here's a point that does need to be made in response to what Nader just said there. How many Christian pastors today would stand in the pulpit and tell their people the Crusades were a good idea? It needed to be done. It was necessary and it was compatible with our religion, and we should keep doing it. We should keep doing it in our modern, whatever means we have necessary. The Crusades need to go on. I don't know of any Christian pastors who would do that. However, in the Islamic world, you can walk into just about any mosque and find an imam saying that about the jihads of the past and the jihads of our present day. Now, that's a distinction that Nader apparently is unaware of. Finally, Ralph Nader says that Christians committed acts of religious savagery during the Crusades.
Between 1095 and the following 200 years, armies from Christendom moved in to Asia Minor and the Middle East, slaughtering as they go. In one conflict, the Christian general took out 2,500 Muslim prisoners and beheaded them.
True. I would recommend the book by Ergun Kainer, a regular guest here on this program. He calls it the new book he's got with his brother. It's called Christian Jihad. It's on the Crusades. It is a open-eyed, honest look at what really did happen during the Crusades. Very, very compelling book. At the very end of the book, he actually lays side-by-side, line-for-line, the fatwa issued, if you want to call it that, by Osama bin Laden and the directive by Pope Urban for the Crusades. And they are remarkably the same. So, yes. But I ask again, today, do we find Christian pastors saying the Crusades were a good idea and we need to continue them today and Christians are compelled to do so? No. Do we find the clerics of Islam saying that jihad should continue? Yes. Okay, so what's on your mind? Last 20 minutes of open lines this week, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Anything you want to talk about. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Back to the phones, Jane in her car. Jane, welcome to Issues, etc.
Hi, Tad. I was in Turkey for almost 2 weeks, 2 years ago, and we questioned our guy quite a lot, and he told us that we would be perfectly welcome to open a Lutheran church there. All you have to do is register with the state. Now, this is what he told us, and it could be like if you're in Israel and you want a Christian guide, your Jewish guide will become Christian. You know, whatever you request, they become. And so maybe he was just speaking to what he thought we wanted to hear. And then also, when we were in Greece, it's illegal to proselytize. Again, you know, with the Greek Orthodox Church there.
Yeah, you're right. And that's a good point. That's a very good point, Jane. So was he actually saying, your guide, did you get the impression that he was saying that you could not only set up your church, which would be, that would be toleration, but that church could also publicly proselytize?
He did. You know, we didn't go that far. I wish I would have asked. But he kind of just left it for you to think that. His wife was a Christian. He met her in England. She was a doctor, a pediatrician, in fact, in Turkey. And he said, and their children went to church with her. I think they were Catholic. I'm not sure. But anyway, if I would go back now, I would question more, get a little deeper in the questions.
All right. Thank you very much, Jan. I appreciate the call. My producer was very recently in Turkey as well, Ephesus. It was one of those kind of Greek old New Testament tours or whatever, the place you go when you go over to that area of the world. And he had a guide there as well, young lady, who was a Muslim. She did not claim to be a Christian. She was a Muslim. Now, she had a very different take on what Turkey was all about. She even took him aside at one point and said, you tell your president, you tell George W. Bush not to trust our prime minister. He wants Sharia law. He will have it in time. The face he is showing the rest of the world is not his true face. That's what she said. She was a Muslim in Turkey. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Yesterday, we talked a bit about the president's NATO meeting in Turkey with Uwe Simonetto. And if you heard that, he said this is just, he's usually very complimentary of our president. And he said, this is just a case where I cannot fathom why the president would be doing this. Cannot fathom this. Now, his main concern was that admission of Turkey into the UN would turn some European countries into de facto Islamic states, where we'd be getting pretty close to political majorities in some European countries. And he thought it would mean, he thought it would mean the end of European identity there, to let Turkey into the European Union. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And as to whether or not Turkey was the kind of democracy the president was making it out to be, he had very, very serious doubts. Is it just the exception that proves the rule? Yeah, we can find an example of a democracy in a majority Muslim country. At least so far. Limited religious freedom. But is that the exception that proves the rule, or is it the future? This is what concerns me. I'll be quite honest with you. I'm all for democracy. I think it's a great thing. But what concerns me is that it sounds as though, you know, Uwe said, I don't know who's advising the president. He said, I don't, the president doesn't drink, but someone must be drinking who's giving him his advice. Does democracy have this transforming power? It almost sounds like it has the power to change hearts. That all you got to do is give people the opportunity for freedom, and regardless of their religious system, as though Islam is completely neutral when it comes to the freedoms granted by democracy. If you just give democracy, get the thin edge of the wedge in there, then democracy will lead the way and the two will be completely compatible. And is Turkey an example of that compatibility? 505-7850 1-800-730-2727. What do you make of the fact that when polled, likely voters among Muslim Americans, virtually no support for President George W. Bush? Virtually none. The majority of the support goes to either Ralph Nader, 26%, or over half of them in support of John Kerry. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, a little closer here to the end of this hour, we're going to be changing our subjects here, talking a bit about gay marriage and the support for gay marriage, whether or not Jesus' ethic of love is being violated by this administration's lack of support for gay marriage here in the United States. Keith is on the line. He's calling from his car. Keith, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Pastor. How are you today?
Very well.
Pastor, I was wondering if I could get your insight as to why in the United States, Islam should be tolerated as a legitimate religion, when in fact it seems to advocate illegal warfare and attacks against other entities outside of Islam. Why should we view that as a religion?
Well, I can give you the simplest answer I can think of is when in the United States, Islam doesn't matter. I'm sure if you could find cases where the government could prove that it's advocating attacks on the United States, those things would be prosecuted as crimes. The question is, and that's why I asked the question, what was it, some weeks ago on Open Lines, should we be monitoring what's going on in American mosques? But when in the United States, Muslims tend to be very American. I'm not saying that they are individually dishonest. I'm talking about they, as one of our callers said, they tend to get westernized. Less Muslim, more American in their beliefs, especially in comparison to their counterparts internationally. It would be a very simple, it comes down to the question I've been asking, it would be very simple to answer the question if we had imams in this country openly calling for the downfall of the United States, or openly calling for the death of Americans, or openly calling for terrorist acts within the borders of the United States or elsewhere. It would be easy. Then you could say, look, wherever it is, it advocates for terrorism. But we do have this very odd situation where kind of when in Rome, taken to its extreme, when in an Islamic nation, the rhetoric of the mosque is very different than when in a Western nation. Now, there are exceptions. You can find mosques in, we talked about it yesterday with Uwe Simonetto, in Europe, where the rhetoric is very much against democracy, freedom, the United States, its allies. You can find mosques in Great Britain, where the same thing is true. They're sending their money to Al-Qaeda. It leaves us with a difficult, will the real Islam please stand up? Kind of a situation. And the reason I continue to come back to this question is very simple. If this question goes unanswered, we are literally walking into the dark. In our foreign policy, in the way we deal with Islamic nations, we are walking into the dark. If we assume at the outset that Islam is neutral with regard to democracy, neutral with regard to the freedoms granted by democracy, we might be stepping off a cliff. We might not. We might be right, but we might be very, very wrong. Harold is calling from St. Charles. Harold, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, after President Bush, what all he's done there to get on the good side of the Muslims, you know, right after 9/11, praising them and asking the people not to cause trouble with American Muslims and to invite them to the White House and all sorts of other things there to get on the good side of them. And then in London, he was asked there, Mr. President, do you believe there that the Christians and the Muslims and the Jews worship the same God? And he said, yes. After all this, the American Muslims are not humored up a bit at all there to favor President Bush.
And then what does it tell you then, Harold?
The what?
What does that tell you then?
Well,
he has bent over backwards. I think you could probably argue he's bent over as far backwards as someone can in his position.
You agree there that he has really bent over backwards constantly to get on the good side of him, huh?
Yes, I agree completely.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the thing of it is he just doesn't see what's going on. Mm. Yeah, because if they're not going to vote for him, I should have thought there that they would have had some polls earlier, which would have indicated there, but...
Well, I wonder how he's reading the polls that came out from CARE. Thank you very much, Harold. I appreciate the call. I imagine he's looking at him going, 2% for the last 2.5 years. I have been reiterating that Islam is a nation of peace, that we're not at war with Islam, but with terrorism, that terrorism and Islam are two completely different things, that terrorist is the result of a totalitarian political ideology, not the result of a religion. I've been trying my hardest to distinguish between these two things. Now, see, I don't know if it's a good idea that he distinguishes between the two things, but that's what he's been doing. And he's saying to himself, 2% of likely voters among Muslims in the United States are planning to vote for me? I imagine he's scratching his head, too. Well, you know, if I had the answer to this question, I'd give it to you, honestly. I have my suspicions. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery says, the true nature of Islam is found when it's in the political majority. When it exercises political majority, then you see what Islam truly is. No religious freedom. Very few freedoms, period. No toleration of other beliefs. When it's in the political minority, it's a very different animal. It tends to accommodate itself. But when it gains political majority, its true colors fly. That is not a view apparently shared by the president, at least now. And I hope we don't have to learn the hard way that he's wrong.
Is the disenfranchisement of lesbian and gay citizens of this country who are seeking to express their mutual love in affirming ways. At the crux of this administration is a demonic force which perverts the love ethic of Jesus.
That's Pastor Randley Bailey. He's a Hebrew professor at Interdenominational Theological Center in Atlanta. He was reacting to a meeting last week between black clergy opposed to gay marriage and the Congressional Black Caucus. Now, what he said there was that this administration, the Bush administration, when it comes to gay marriage, he says demonic. There's something demonic at work in this administration, and that they are violating the love ethic of Jesus. Now, it should not surprise us at all on this issue of gay marriage that the old love card gets played. You're not being loving. And it shouldn't surprise us at all that in the culture, the, quote, love ethic of Jesus should be misunderstood to be, well, what love means in the culture today. What does it mean today? It doesn't just mean toleration. It doesn't just mean concern and compassion. It means affirmation of everything. If you don't affirm everyone in everything they do, think, say, or everything they might do, think, or say, you're not loving. You're unloving. Shouldn't surprise us that misperception of love and the love ethic of Jesus should prevail in the culture. You know, when I first started doing this program, I remember it distinctly, talking about naming names, pointing out errors, criticizing errors within the Christian circle. And we had people call this program, said, Jesus never did that. Jesus never did that. Jesus was loving and kind and compassionate and accepting of all people. Now, you don't have to wade very far into the New Testament, into the Gospels, to find Jesus acting in what the modern culture would consider to be very unloving ways. Downright insulting to his enemies, in their face, naming names, confrontational. Very curmudgeon-y Jesus comes across sometimes, doesn't he? Now, by modern politically correct standards, Jesus would come across as unloving. He'd be violating his own love ethic, right? He would also be opposed to gay marriage, which would put Jesus at odds with his own love ethic, right? Shouldn't surprise us that the culture misunderstands that. And, you know, eventually the callers kind of died down. Yeah, I guess Jesus did name names. I guess Jesus was kind of hard on his opponents at times. But he never ceased to be loving, did he? No. Never ceased to be loving. Even when he was upbraiding his opponents as children of the devil, it was all purely motivated by an absolutely pure heart and love for his enemies. Seen so beautifully in his final moments when those enemies have gained the upper hand, or at least seemingly gained the upper hand. And he says to them, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. You want to really understand the love ethic of Jesus? Go there to the cross. The church sometimes even misunderstands this. When we oppose error, when we argue against things. Things not so black and white as the morals. Oh, you know, the gay marriage will oppose that. But when it comes to theological error, it's unloving to oppose that, we hear. No. We'll just follow in Jesus' footsteps and oppose theological error wherever we find it. And if you want to talk about Jesus and love, you got to talk about it the way he did and the way he lived it. Perfect obedience to his Father, a sinless life, not for himself, but for sinners, for you and for me, all the way to death on a cross. You want to talk about Jesus and love? That's the love ethic of Jesus, if you can call it that. He does not affirm sinners in their sins. No. He dies for sinners in their place.
Is the disenfranchisement of lesbian and gay citizens of this country who are seeking to express their mutual love in affirming ways. At the crux of this administration is a demonic force which perverts the love ethic of Jesus.